Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
First annual World Series of Poker on day four of the main event. And on today's show, an interview with one of the chip leaders going into day four and a real poker legend, a member of the Poker Hall of Fame, two-time main event champion Johnny Chan will join us. A rare interview. Johnny does not do a lot of interviews, but because of his relationship with Dennis, he will join us on the show today. Also, updates on who is leading in the main event and details from the World Series of Poker circuit, which has announced its 2010-2011 schedule with some changes. Hello, I'm Paul Harrah, sitting in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. And my partner, Dennis Phillips, is sitting somewhere in Las Vegas, unfortunately not at one of the tables on day four of the main event. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Paul. Well, I'm not at the WSOP. I'm actually playing in the band over at the Venetian, their main event, their $5,000 buy-in. I wish I was still at the Rio, but we'll leave it to other people this year.
Well, a lot of people have been asking me after your historic two-year run to third place in 2008 and to 45th place last year, what the experience was like this year for you. So let's get into that just a little bit.
Well, it was a good experience. It was a rough first day. I ran into two different sets with the Kings and with Jacks. Crippled me. I went into day two with only 9,500. We start with 30,000. So it was definitely one of the low stacks going into day two. Day two started out good. I had to find a hand to try and double up with. I actually got ace-king early, got called by tens, and caught a king, doubled up, pulled in a few other pots. I got all the way up to almost 60,000 in chips.
Nice. Starting at less than 10K and moving your way up to six times that, that's a pretty good start to the day.
It absolutely was, and it put me up right with the chip average at that time. So I was feeling pretty good at that time. Then I ran into a buzzsaw called Rebecca Kranz.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, not exactly a well-known name in the poker world. She'd never played live. She qualified on a $50 online tournament and made her way there.
So what was the hand you ran into with her?
Well, she's a nice gal, and she's not a bad player, but right, just to lay the groundwork, for the first few hours at the table there, she hardly played a hand. She's about my age. All of the typical stereotypes would apply to it, we thought. She just sat back there quietly. She had a nice chip stack of, you know, 35, 40,000 to start the day out. And then along about 3 or 4 hours into the day, it's like somebody woke her up. In four hands in less than three rounds around the table, she made massive bets pre-flop. To give you an idea, at that time we were doing, that would have been 150 and 300 is where it started out. Gentleman down at the end of the table, another very good player, was involved in a couple of hands. I was involved in a couple, but he would bet like 1,000 or 1,050, and she would raise it to 4,000.
Wow.
During that time, I got involved in two hands, just came in behind a raise on both of them, once with jacks and once with sevens. Both times she made this massive overbet, and I laid them down. So I'd laid down pocket jacks. I'd laid down pocket sevens. The other gentleman down there said he laid down queens one time. I don't know. He was involved in two other hands, and I don't know what he laid down. But we're all laying down, never seeing a flop, never seeing any of her hands. So it was kind of interesting. Then I got into a massive one. Same gentleman raised down there. He told me later he had ace 9, and he raised it. This was in the blinds with 2 and 400. He raised it to 1,300. I looked down at pocket kings. I re-raised him to 3,300. Without hesitation, Rebecca made it 10,000.
Yow.
Yeah. Now then, with what she'd done before and everything, I had to make a decision here. Obviously, kings, I'm not laying down. Not pre-flop here. I'm in position behind her because she was one of the blinds so that I could actually see a flop and make a decision then. With my assumption was that she would have either aces, kings, queens, ace-king, ace-queen, possibly jacks. Although a lot of this is question mark because we hadn't seen any of her hands.
Now, at this point, what's your stack size?
My stack size this time is a little over 50,000.
Okay.
You know, 52, 53,000. I'm in good shape. She has chipped up because of these other things. She's probably up to around 70 at this time or 75.
Okay, the reason I ask about stack size is once you make it 3,300 and then she makes it 10,000, you've got a couple of choices here, and one of them is not laying this hand down. So you got to think about whether you're going to call and see the flop and then decide what you're going to do going forward, or if you're going to raise. And with only about 50,000 there, if you were to raise her even to 25 or 30,000, you're committing so much of your stack that you might as well just shove. Was that your thinking?
Exactly. The two options I have there is to call and see a flop and see if, you know, danger cards come out to see what happens, or just shove it in there. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with either one, but I'm telling you, by looking at her, if I shove in there, she's calling.
Okay.
She absolutely believes she has no, there's no way in the world she can lay this hand down.
And by the way, when you say danger cards, we're talking about, you know, all those hands you just described. Jacks would be at the low end of the danger card range, but really you don't want to see ace or paint at all. You want to see some rags on the board if you're going to make this move, right?
Well, I don't mind kings coming.
Well, of course.
But other than that, you're absolutely right. I would love about an 8-high board to flop out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if she happens to have aces, well, I'm in trouble because I would have a hard time laying pocket kings down to an 8-high board. I don't know if I could have done that or not.
Okay. So
irregardless.
So you called?
I called. I threw the other 7,700 out there. So I have 20% of my chips in the pot right now. Flop is an ace, queen, nine.
Well, there's the perfect flop for you. Not.
Yeah. Now stop and think. All those hands I named, out of all of those hands, what hand can I now beat?
Nothing.
The jacks.
Yeah,
that's
well.
That's it.
Yeah, which I don't really think she would have at this point, but maybe. But anyway.
Yeah. So anyhow, if she has aces, kings, queens, the other two kings, I mean, if she has ace, king, if she has ace, queen, any of those hands, would beat me. And
yep.
She didn't give me much of a choice anyhow. She bet 20,000 out. That's what she led out with.
Okay.
So I have to either throw it all in there or fold. And I folded them, and I showed them, and both the guys at the other end of the table, the gentleman that had been involved in Lloyd's hands, and another gentleman who is an online player that had won a couple of million online, very good, solid player that I'd met before, looked at me and said, not a chance in the world, I'd have been broke. Both of them would have shoved preflop.
Did she show what she had?
She had ace-king.
Wow.
The other guy had ace-nine, so she caught a two-outer on the flop.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things here. Number one, you're absolutely right pre-flop that if she's that kind of player, even if you shoved pre-flop, she's calling with ace-king, and now you're stacked and you're broke.
Yes. Then I would have just got up from the table and walked away.
And
what it would have been.
And she, you know, you were worried that you were going to get those cards on the flop, and there's the pure luck of the kind of flop where you're going to have to get away from it. So you lose 10K there, and you're down to about 40 at that point.
Correct. Less than a round later, and here we go again. Same gentleman down at the end raises it up again to 1,300. I look down at pocket jacks. She's behind me counting chips. I'm not exaggerating this at all. She's already counting chips out, and I'm going, if I re-raise it, and she pops it over, I'm going to have to lay down the jacks again or shove.
Yep.
I don't want that. So I smooth called the 13, and she smooth called the 13.
Oh.
She did not raise it. Flop comes out there, 8-8-3.
Okay.
Right? Now, I'm feeling pretty confident with my jacks.
Yep.
First gentleman checks. I bet 2,300. Now, into a pot. Pot had a little over half the pot, or right at half the pot. She smooth called. And the other gentleman folded. So now we're heads up.
At this point, what do you put her on here, Dennis?
Well, I need to correct. There were two spades also out there.
Okay.
I could see her coming in with two high spades. I could see her coming in with nines or tens. I could see her coming in with an ace king or an ace queen with the two callers there. Because we hadn't seen a lot of her flops. Or she basically been taking out the pots without showing her cards.
Yep.
So there's a whole variety of hands that I can beat that I can put her on. I cannot put her on aces or kings or queens. At least for sure not aces and kings. Because the way she's been playing, I guarantee she'd have popped it up to 5,000 or 6,000 there.
Okay.
So I've eliminated those two, and I really don't think queens. I even think queens she would have re-raised it. So I'm feeling pretty dang confident. All right. But she smooth called me pre-flop, and she smooth called me on the flop. So far I don't have a whole lot of chips in there. Anyhow, the turn card is a 4. Not a spade. Again, I'm feeling. I debated and debated. I finally checked, which I wonder about. Now, in the long run, I'm glad I did, but I wonder in the long run whether that was really a wise move, especially if I put her on the two spades. But as it turned out, she turned around and bet 5,000 on the turn.
Oh.
Now, what hand can you put her on there, given the description I've given?
Well, again, it's the same thing that you were talking about before. She's got the overpair. I don't think she has an 8. I don't know, but maybe she's in there with ace 8. Maybe she's in there with 8-9 or 7-8 or something like that.
It's possible, I guess.
It's entirely possible, but I probably would think more like she's on 9s or 10s and thinks that she's good here.
Yeah. If it's an ace 8, it has to be a suited ace 8 because she overplayed suited cards, it appeared, or I could see her doing that. I didn't know that for sure. I just can't see her playing a 10-8 or a 9-8 or an 8-7 there.
Yep.
I don't think that's her style. So I'm in my own mind, right or wrong, I'm eliminating those hands. River card is another 4. So it's 8-8-4-4-3 out there.
So you obviously called the 5K on the
turn. I called the 5K.
Yeah.
I did not shove.
And now what's the river?
Another 4.
8-8-4-4-3 is the board.
Correct. 8 high board.
What do you do?
At this time, I've got 30, ballpark, I would guess, I probably have about 34,000 left. I'd had about 52 or 3. I'd lost 10,000 on the previous hand, down to about 42. Thrown in 1,000 preflop, another 2, so about 8,000 into this hand. I'm somewhere in the low 30s.
Yep.
She bets 15,000.
Whew.
I tanked. And since it was heads up, we even had the cameras on. ESPN was over watching. I don't know if this one will be shown or not. But I even started commenting, and I started saying those exact things. I do not think that you have an overpair to mine. I think I have you killed if that's the case, if you have a pair in your hand there. I can't see anything else other than nines and tens. The only way that I'm beat is you caught that board. Somehow or other, you caught an 8 or a 3 or a king, or a 4, I mean. I said that right out loud. I'm just going there. If you did, you did. I can't lay this down. And I called the 15, and she calmly turned over 2 threes.
Oh, she flopped the boat, the underfull.
Flopped the boat. Uh-huh. Did it totally. Played it well. Got the maximum value out of it, I think. I'm not going to regret her at all.
Yep.
But after all the other hands, after all that other history, after all of my thinking, the only thing I could put her on that would beat me is if she somehow or other had an 8 or she had the pocket 3s. Because she's making this call not with pocket 4s. They came turn and river.
Right.
So that's the only hand I'm really worried about is she had possibly an ace 8 suited or pocket 3s. Other than that, I think I have her killed.
Yeah.
And I could even, I don't think no other should. The two spades came and no other spades came. I could even see her possibly trying to buy the pot at the end. I don't know if she's that good of a player or not. But even in my mind, even in the back of it, there's a 5 or 10% chance that she missed her spade flush and is trying to take the pot down.
Wow.
So anyhow, again, the two guys at the other end of it, I showed my jacks. They looked at me and said, I'd be walking away from the table. There's no way I wouldn't have shoved either on the flop or the turn.
Wow.
On the turn of the river.
And then you're crippled and you don't have many chips left and things didn't last much longer. And so that's how you went out on day two. We got to take a break here. Before we do, I want to wish the best of luck to Terry Struldreer, who is a player from St. Louis who won his entry into the main event right here at Harrah's St. Louis. There are a couple of other St. Louisans who are still in there, including another dealer in town by the name of Jeff Wade. We wish the best of luck to them and to anybody else from the region who is playing in this. If you want to be part of the 2011 World Series of Poker, then early in the year you should come down here to Harrah's and play in the qualifiers. That's how Dennis got in there in 08. That's how Terry got there this year. That's how lots of people ended up in the main event of the World Series of Poker. Harrah's St. Louis, the biggest poker room in town, now open 24/7. Last weekend, Dennis, they were spreading a 3-6 game, a 20-40 game, a 1-2, 1-3, and 2-5 game, 1-2-5 PLO, and a 5-10 horse game, all on the same weekend. So there's lots of action going on here at Harrah's St. Louis. You can get the tournament schedule by going to harrahs.com/STLpoker. Or just click the link that we have right next to the podcast, available on thechipleader.com. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harrah's in St. Louis. Back with more in just a moment to talk more about the main event of this year's World Series of Poker, and then our exclusive interview with Johnny Chan. All ahead as the final table continues on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
It's Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's with a special World Series of Poker edition of The Final Table from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
So as I mentioned, we got our Johnny Chan interview coming up in just a couple of minutes. Johnny was ninth in chips when the day started today. He's got 636,000 behind another former guest of ours, a guy by the name of Andrew Brown. The chip leader, by the way, is James Carroll, who has 803,000 as they start off day four. That's a pretty massive stack, isn't it?
Oh, it's an awesome stack, but it's still early in the tournament. It means he should be able to, you know, get into the money. There are only about 500 people from the money at the start of the day, so that's pretty good. But I'm telling you, Johnny Chan, with the quality of a player that he is and the experience he's had, him having chips, that is massive. I would not like to be at Johnny's table right now.
Yep. The numbers on this year's main event, 7,319 people started it. Last year when Dennis was in the 09 event, they had 6,494. So they are up more than 20% this year. Interestingly, the prize money for first place is down. Didn't Peter Eastgate take down something like $9 million, and last year Joe Catta got something like $9 million?
Joe only got 8.1 last year. But what they did is last year they changed the structure and spread it out a little, making it not quite as top-heavy, which I kind of agree with. I think last year ninth place paid like $1.2 million, with a few people less than what we had in 08. Whereas in our place, ninth place paid only $900,000.
Yeah, well, this year,
spread it out a little bit.
This year, ninth place is going to pay $811,000. So they really have flattened it out, taking some off the top. And first place, this year's world champion, will get $8.9 million, which surprises me because it's such a larger field than last year.
Yeah.
And even if you just make the money, and 747 players will make the money sometime today, they won't get double their money as they had the last couple of years. They'll only take down $19,000 for their $10,000 investment. I want to go back to the beginning of the main event last year because it's always a circus atmosphere in addition to the excitement that people have there. I mean, I saw a guy on 1B or 1C who was dressed just like Chris Jesus Ferguson. I mean, he had the hat, he had the hair, he had the beard, he had the whole thing. I saw a woman come up to him and say, "Jesus, will you sign my breasts?" And the guy actually had to say, I'm not really him. He kind of said it softly, "I'm not really him." At which point the woman covered up her chest as if a famous stranger could sign her breasts. But a not famous stranger couldn't even see her breasts. That was funny. And you have people dressed up in all sorts of outfits going there. But you also have people who are, I think, far too serious about this. Now this is your third main event, and I'm sure you've noticed this as well. At many of these tables, There's no smiling going on. There's no happiness. And I'm talking about the first half hour to hour of the main event as I walk through the pavilion and through the Amazon room. What's with everybody not enjoying themselves?
Well, I've had the luxury of being there a couple of years. I go there and I do have some fun. And usually when I sit at a table, I try to engage people in conversation and lighten it up a little bit. And if nothing else, getting them talking and asking questions to me. I had a couple of people. I moved tables each of the 2 days. And after I'd come there, start talking to people, people were happy about it. I had a couple of guys say, thanks for coming over. It was extremely boring till you showed up.
Mm-hmm.
But to look at it the other way, Paul, these guys, a lot of them have never been in this big of a tournament. $10,000 is a major investment. They want to make sure that they don't do the wrong move in the first level, that they don't do something that they're going to regret for the next 2 or 3 or 4 months or whatever. So they are very, very serious, and they're uncomfortable. They don't know if they're giving off tells. They don't know if the caliber of the players next to them, because they've never seen them before. They could be from Italy, Germany, Russia. I think there were 100, and I don't know how many different countries represented this year.
Yep.
There. They're talking foreign languages. You're in a strange room. You look around, and as far as the eye can see, you see more tables and more people playing, and you go, holy cow, this is unbelievable. It's overwhelming.
Yep.
And a lot of people kind of shrink into their shell a little bit. And I don't blame them. That's not that. I may have done the same thing. I actually don't remember a whole lot of the first couple of hours. I might have sat there stoic the whole time, too.
It is funny to me, though, that this is the most exciting thing. I mean, many of these people have been looking forward to it for months, maybe up to a year. I don't know. You qualified 9 months before you went out there.
Yeah.
And here they are at the most exciting poker tournament of their life. And they looked miserable. But maybe you're right. Maybe they were scared or anxious or who knows what it was. Oldest player at the World Series of Poker this year, again, the man who continues to play, so he continues breaking his own record, Jack Urey, 97 years old.
Wow.
Youngest player this year, John May, who played on day 1D the day after he turned 21 years old. The only way you'll ever get younger is by playing on your 21st birthday.
Which will probably happen.
The 7,319 people who were in it this year make it the second largest main event ever, the 2006, which would be the Jamie Gold year, right?
That's correct.
That had over 8,000 in it. They had 7 other events with more than 3,000 and 1 with more than 4,000. In addition to that, meaning that this had 9 of the 17 largest tournaments in poker history. A couple of other things. There are 4 Mizrakis in this tournament, and they're all still in it, Dennis. The Grinder, your buddy Michael Mizraki, and his brothers Danny, Eric, and Robert are all still in the main event on day 4.
Can you imagine the storyline that ESPN could get with this? They've got to be cheering these guys on. That's awesome.
Yeah. And a couple of other former guests of this show are still in there. Sorry to say Vanessa Russo is not among them. She was doing great for the first 2.5 days, but then things went very sour for her towards the end of day 3. But Eric Baldwin, Base Baldy, and Shannon Shore, the young pro who was just on with us a few weeks ago, are both in there as day 4 continues. I also want you to talk a little bit about a gentleman by the name of Michael Rivera, who we were both introduced to, or at least I was introduced to. I think you knew him ahead of time, but we ran into him last week. Talk about him, if you would.
He's an inspiration for us all. It's a gentleman who, at the age of 20, was struck with MS. That's the same affliction that affects my brother. I'm fairly familiar with it. It's a nasty, nasty disease. This gentleman who was going to college, living his life, an athlete, the whole bit, in 8 short years, is now confined to a wheelchair, has limited vision, limited mobility at all. He follows poker on TV and a few other things, but he is very limited in the capacity of what he can do. He went into the main event this year with his full family support. He had parents there and sisters and brothers-in-laws, and one of his brother-in-law his sat behind him because he could not see the cards out there in the middle of the table. He could read his own. He could make his own bets. He made all his own decisions. He had no help on that, but he had to have someone tell him what the cards in the middle of the table were. I walked in. I'd met his brother-in-law and a couple of family members the night before, and I promised I would come in there and cheer him on a little bit on day 1D when he was playing. I walked in there and stood behind him, hadn't even said hi to him yet. I was there on the hand he busted out on.
Yeah.
It was very, very poor timing on me. And this guy, a true gentleman, turns around, sees me, and immediately smiles and wants to shake my hand and says, thanks for coming here. Now, he just busted out of this tournament. He immediately does a flip-flop, and he's smiling and happy and the whole thing. He said something to me that I'll probably never forget, and it just choked me up. We were talking about the disease, and I was talking about my limited experience with it. He said, well, one thing for sure, better me than anybody else because I can handle it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And this just moments after he had busted out of the main event of the World Series of Poker.
Yeah.
Michael, you're a brave guy. And we hope that you can get back there next year. And to his brother-in-law and to his family and everybody who were there, they were wearing Team Michael Rivera shirts and really cheering him on from the rail. And you're absolutely right, Dennis. The word inspirational comes to mind. We've got a break here so we can get to our interview with Johnny Chan in the second half of this show. But first, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the place where you can play and qualify for upcoming events like more NAPT action later on this year.
Absolutely. They've got one coming out at the Bicycle out in California. We've got a couple of others in the works. We'll have a full schedule for next year on the NAPT. And remember, PokerStars.net, go on there, qualify for free, and have some fun, guys, because it's going to be coast-to-coast tournaments. I will be at a lot of them. So
and you can also join me
wherever.
I was going to say, you can also go on there and qualify for the big game, the PokerStars.net TV show that aired for 3 weeks. It's been in reruns the last couple, but they're going to be shooting some more episodes very soon, and that'll be on Fox stations around the country and on the PokerStars.tv website as well. That you get in for free, just like the other qualifiers for everything else PokerStars does.
Well, yeah, it's unbelievable. Right now you can go to Brazil on a trip. You can go to Argentina in September. You can go to London in October. Good grief, guys. Anywhere in the world you want to go, you can shuffle up and deal. Just go to PokerStars.net. It's unbelievable.
We're right back with our exclusive interview with Johnny Chan as the final table continues on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis, it's a special World Series of Poker edition of The Final Table with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to The Final Table. Paul Harrah's with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and one of the legends of poker, a man who is in the Poker Hall of Fame, 10-time bracelet owner, 2-time world champion, Johnny Chan. You got a smile on your face every time I say something like that.
I tell you what, it's just so excited to just listen to you, Paul. I mean, the way you present of me, it's great.
Well, thank you, and thank you for coming up here. And I know you two guys have known each other for a little while, right?
We've known him for a little bit. I've respected him for years, obviously, because not only are you a great poker player, but everybody that knows you knows what a great person you are on top of that. So it just
thank
makes
you,
it
Dennis.
So easy to talk to you.
Absolutely. I'm a pleasure to be here.
Johnny, what's different about being in the World Series of Poker in 2010 compared to being in all those years before?
Well, I tell you what, last year I didn't even last the first day, so this year is a little different. I first 30 minutes, I had pocket tens and under the gun, and a guy first position raised the pot. And the other guy with pocket eights call, and flop comes jack, 8-10. I lit at the pot, the guy raised the pot, folded, and the guy with 3-8 raised me. I said, wow, this is going to be all right.
I love it.
I said, this is going to be all right. So I re-raised him a little bit, you know, just put a little tease here and there. Next thing he think, he moved on in. I beat him to the pot, I call it, and we turn our hands over. He had 3-8 and I had 3-10, and comes a queen and a king, and I double up right away. And after that, I just play a lot of pots and race a lot of hands and start winning. Every hour, my chips just keep growing.
Johnny's one of those few people that are so dangerous when they have average chips or lower and are a monster when they get the chips. The
thank
guy
you,
you don't want to be at their table, that's for sure.
How is it when you sit down at a table and look at those faces, particularly if you don't know anybody at the table? Do you see them react saying, oh, my God, it's Johnny Chan?
Well, Paul, my table yesterday. I didn't know any of those players. I never played one hand of poker. I mean, I've been playing poker for 30 years. I didn't play one hand of poker with those nine players.
Yep.
I said, man, I don't know how they play, how good they are, or how loose they are. I'm just sit there and just wait and finally pick up pocket pair. I had to play that. So, fortunately, flop a set, and it was okay. After I double up, I started, test the water and keep raising the pots, and they just keep calling, and then I bet on the flop. They fold. They keep doing that for about 8 hours, and
you end up with over 100K.
Exactly, 163,000, so I'm very happy.
And when you're sitting with a table full of strangers like that who you've never played a single hand with before, how long does it take you to get a read on the table?
Paul, there's nine players, so it takes at least 3-4 hours, because a lot of players didn't play a lot of hands because they're nursing their chips because they scare. So I really don't know how they play. I'm still eventually they start crack up. They start making plays and this and that, and I catch a couple guys trying to bluff me, and that was all right too.
I mean, totally different than what it was. I met you in 2008, actually, when we got played down. You ran a deep run there in the main event of 2008. We were actually a table apart, and you were nice enough to talk to me and sign my hat and everything that day, so it was great. I find out now, because it's totally different, when they recognize me, they do one of two extremes. Either they won't even play a hand with me hardly. They're just thrown away where you can't get any money from them at all. Or they get over-aggressive because they're afraid I'm going to outplay them after the flop, so they just make massive bets to try and keep me out of it. I get both extremes, which neither one are good to play with. Well, I don't know, what do you run into?
I run into player just try to just bully me. I mean, with nothing. I mean, they just want – you know what? They just want to beat the hand – they just want to beat Johnny Chance so they can show their hands of bluff. I got a 7 of deuce. Ha, ha, ha. I get 8 and a 3. Ha, ha, ha. You know, but it's good for poker. So, but every now and then they're going to run into the nuts. They say, uh-oh. What did I do now?
Do you blame the movie
Sorry
Rounders?
About that.
Do you blame the movie Rounders for that? That they all want to be Matt Damon?
I know. No, that was a good movie. I think that's the best motion picture poker movie they ever make.
Yep.
Every now and then they double race me, and I say, "What do you have?" John, I don't remember. I said, okay, that's good. I remember the line, too.
Yeah. But the ones who are trying to do that, are they part of this new generation of younger players who are three betting a lot more? Because there was a time, I'm sure, when you were playing in the World Series in the late 80s, if somebody three bet pre-flop, they usually had something.
I was talking to Doyle just a couple nights ago. We were playing a cash game at the Bellagio. We were playing 2 and 4,000. I say, Doyle, the players are entirely different nowadays, you know? In the old days, when I race, somebody re-race, somebody move on in, they usually have the aces. But nowadays, I race, re-race, they liable to have a jack and a four or anything. So I don't know. I mean, it's a new generation of poker, to put it this way.
Yeah.
I mean, internet has just changed poker another chapter.
Yeah. We had Barry Greenstein on the show. At the beginning of the World Series of Poker, and he said something that really surprised me, and I think Dennis was surprised by this too. He said he's in his 50s now. We're all in our 50s, so we could talk like this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. He said he's in his 50s now, and he feels like he's past his prime. You know, he says guys like Tom Dwan are coming into their prime, but Barry says mentally he's past his prime and sees poker really changing to a point where he has to struggle to keep up. What do you say?
Well, I think Barry's been playing too much poker. I mean, just look at Doyle. Doyle's the most – I think he's the best 74, 76-year-old poker player I ever play with. Problem of Barry is he played too many tournaments. He's kind of burned now. You know, after you play every day, you don't make a big score. Every day you got to give the house $5,000, $10,000, $2,000. That money adds up. And Tom been winning a lot of money online. He's got, I don't know, $5-10 million. So he can play a little faster, play a little loose. If I lose this one, if I lose this tournament, I can get on the next one. I play the same way because, you know, when I was young, of course, you know, Dennis, we're fearless. I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
We don't know better. We don't know any better. You gave me an ace and a deuce, man. I thought this was a great hand. I'm ready to go.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I agree. You get compliments all the time, and you earn them. Don't worry about that. I heard one down at the Golden Nugget the other day. John, the poker manager, said that you played down there in a doubles tournament where you team up with a different person at different levels.
Yeah, it's about a month and a half ago. Yeah, so, yeah.
I'm not that familiar with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But team poker, which sounded actually interesting. But he said you got matched up with a semi-pro, and they had you guys mic'd, and this guy came walking up to you, and you asked him, you know, just trying nice and, well, how do you want to play this level? And the guy looked at you and said, "You're Johnny Chan. You tell me how to play this level."
Is that true?
This random drawing. I pick a partner. I don't know. I never play a hand of poker with him. I say, he's like 20-some-odd years old.
Yeah.
I say, "How you feel? You feel good? How do you want to play this?" "I don't know. You tell me."
Mm-hmm.
I say, "Okay, all you got to do is I play the hands you don't want to play, and you just don't go crazy."
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we won the first four matches. Unbelievable. I mean, we beat everybody.
Now, what was the format of doubles poker? How does that play?
Two player play one hand. First, the guy look at it before the flop, and after the flop, you give the cards to your partner,
mm-hmm.
and my partner play. I can't say nothing.
Uh-huh.
And when I play, he can't say anything.
Uh-huh.
So it's very interesting. Only match I lost, I played five matches, I recall. I won all four matches, and my last partner was Gus Handsome. Gus didn't have a chance. He was out of the tournament. He didn't care.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that was very interesting. Anytime he's in the pot, somebody race, he's all in.
Uh-huh.
They fold it. He's, because he got nothing to lose, none to gain. So he just keep pounding. Just watch Gus playing his wildest card. It's unbelievable.
So you mean Gus could start out, and he would look at the cards.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have any clue what it is. And he could, you know, three-bet it, whatever. And he gets called, and then the flop comes, and he hands the cards to you.
Yeah, and I look at it. Wow, 7-4. What the hell's going on here? $16,000. I wouldn't pay 2 cents for that card, but that's Gus's Gus, you know. my hair just stand up. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. It's going to be on TV. Going to be on Poker After Dark, I think.
Okay, cool.
It's going to be a good show.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could just, right now, I'm rapidly running through some of the different pros and the possible matches. You know, put Annette and Doyle together, maybe, or something like that. You and Gus, that had to be a heck of a pair up there. I could just imagine some, get Phil and Mike the Mouth together.
Oh, my God, they would never stop talking. I don't even know who's going to play the hand.
Do you like being at a table with guys who are talking a lot, or do you like a quiet table?
Oh, I love those guys talk. I mean, you know, I've been in five poker after darts, play against the best player in the world, Mike DeMau, Phil Hillman, Daniel. They all love to talk. I'm sitting there and listen. Every now and then I go there and steal their money, and it's like, what happened to that, my chips? They keep talking. Every now and then I go, get a little more money.
Yeah.
And suddenly the table's all quiet. How come Johnny got all the chips? Where is my chips win? And also about month and a half ago, we played the World Team Poker. I don't know if you heard of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Team USA, Team China, Team Australia, Team London, Team Israel, Team Greece, Team Vietnam. And Team China won that tournament also.
Oh,
so
sweet.
So going to be air on Fox probably middle of August. So watch it.
You know, there were speaking of Team China, there was a wave of players like you who came from China and Vietnam. A lot of Asian players came to the U.S. around the time you came and in the two decades following it. Now we're seeing an enormous influx of Europeans. And do they play the game differently than you guys did, or are they helping to change poker?
They play total different style. The European plays a little faster than the U.S. player, to be honest with you. They play a lot of Omaha. We play a lot of Hold'em. So right now we play mixed, half Hold'em, half Omaha. So that's exciting. And during that tournament, a World Team Poker, we play three games. Limit Hold'em, Pot Limit Omaha, and No Limit Hold'em. So, you know, the lineup was phenomenal. You got the best of the best, and Team China won it, so I'm very excited.
Sweet. You and Phil and Doyle have more bracelets than anybody else. I mean, like Eric's got eight, and I think Phil Ivy
just got eight.
Just got eight, so they're still behind you a little bit. I mean, is there a little rivalry or a little friendly joking? Is there, I mean, are you coming up behind Phil and saying, I'm right behind you? You know,
Dennis, you brought up a good point. This year I only played like two tournaments.
Uh-huh.
I didn't care for the bracelet. I think I'm holding the record that nobody's going to break because I'm winning back-to-back the main event and runner-up in the third year. So once I got that record, I'm not going to try to chase the bracelet record because the bracelet records, well, the next 5-10 years, somebody's gonna have 12. The other guy have 13, 14. You know, gonna have to race. I'm not into that bracelet thing. So,
okay,
doesn't matter to me.
But while we're speaking about bracelets, I do have to ask you about Phil Ivey, who got his 8th one this year and says that he thinks he can in his career win 30. Possible? The guy's only 33 years old.
Well, they put those. There's six. Was that 56 or 60 tournaments a year?
Yeah, there's about 60 tournaments a year.
And there's also another World Series in London.
Right.
There's 100 tournaments. So out of 100, if you 1%, if you win one tournament a year.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. He's what's that? 30 years old.
33 now.
33.
So he'd be Doyle's age.
It is possible.
Yeah.
It is possible. But one time he hit 50 like us, I mean, he going to slow down a lot.
So you then agree with Barry that once you get into the year 50s, you slow down.
Your body just tired. You can't just sit there and just have no patience. Like yesterday, I played till about 9 o'clock, falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because my body just not there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you should have had some more All-In Energy drink at that point, shouldn't you?
I drank enough, but my guy was out for dinner, so next time make sure you stand by. Yeah, good point. I need some more energy drinks.
Sure. Yeah,
we made a reference. The All-In Energy drink is a drink that Johnny is part owner of and promoter of, and I actually drank it. I drank it myself in 08 and 09, and I've got some at the table with me again here in 10. So it works.
And you've kind of reintroduced it now? You're relaunching the brand? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, relaunched the brand. Our company went public. It's KORE. It's over-the-counter stock right now. So we hire a new CEO and also a new chief financial officer. So we restructured the company, and then we're going to open all West Coast. Like, we try to go into Costco's and Walmart's and all the major stores.
Right.
So hopefully that's going to happen. And also Asia, Taiwan, China, Vietnam, Thailand. Our product's under the FDA approval. So once that approved, we're going to be all over China and Asia. That's just going to be a home run.
Now, I got to ask you about a story that I heard back in 08. That was the year you launched it, right, here at the World Series 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I was playing in the cash games because I don't play in the main event, but I was sweating Dennis and a bunch of other friends who were playing in it. And I heard this story. You tell me if you've heard it too, that somewhere in the main event, somebody was at a table a couple of hours in, a waitress came over to take an order, asked the guy what he wanted. He said, all in. Another player at the table said, call. And they made him put his chips in.
Oh, my God.
Did you hear that story?
I did not hear that story at all.
If it's not true, it should be a commercial anyway.
That's a good point.
It's actually not bad.
That's a good point.
And the guy, by the way, who said all in the story, won the hand.
Oh, nuts. I was going to say, I'll be the guy that calls him at the table. But not if I lose.
There's a justice there, you know? That's good. Yeah. Good story. I like that one, Paul.
Yeah. And do you still have the orange? Is that still part of the Johnny Chan folklore?
Trademark? I always got the orange. Probably I'm going to use that on the final table this year.
Ah, excellent.
Speaking of final tables, when you got to the end of the Tournament of Champions this year, you were down to the final three. It was you, Howard Lederer, Huck Seed. Huck ended up heads up with Howard and took it. Tell us about that experience of not just playing with those three, but all of these great players from recent poker history.
You know, the Tournament Champion is a great tournament because you play against the best of the best, which I've been playing poker with them for the last, 20, 30 years. I know how they play, so that's why I get so far in that tournament because I know how they play.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good structure. Down to three-handed, it was just – we got 810,000 in chips. We end up playing 2,008 and 16,000 blind. We just didn't have enough chips to play. I mean, we're playing showdown. That's all that is.
Right.
So one hand, Huck had pocket seven. I had king and a queen with the button. So, you know, I raised a little bit. He called. Flop comes 9-7 queen. Oh, 9-7 king. What are you going to do with that? I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
The money's going in.
Yeah, the money's going in, baby.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You've got like 70 caches. You've won 13 different tournaments. I know I may have the years wrong, but I think it was 88 you won, and 87 you won, 88 you won, and 89 you came in second.
Right, is that correct?
On it. So those had to be memorable. Since then, in the last 20 years, with all those massive changes and such, is there any particular tournament or any particular win you're really proud of or was just really exciting?
Wow. Good question. Actually, 91 I was also in the final table in the
main
event.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable run.
When Hamid Dashmashi won that tournament, I was on the final table. That was a weird final table because one of the hands was so unbelievable. I had pocket queens, and the blind was very high. I don't know what it was, maybe 2 and 4,000. I was right under the gun. I had pocket queens. Hamid had pocket kings, and the big blind come back with pocket aces.
At a final table?
Final table.
Oh,
so
my
I
gosh.
Raise.
Yeah.
Hamid re-raise, and the two aces go all in. Of course, I fold it.
Yeah.
And Hamid just think, and the guy named Mike something, I don't know, he's like, don't call. I gonna show it to you. I got it. I got two aces. And Hamid thought long time. He threw it away. He turned over two aces, of course. But they changed the rule. You cannot talk.
Right.
That guy, if I had two aces, I said, please call.
Yeah, no kidding.
That guy just so nervous. He just won the pot.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, you were talking before about how you don't think anybody will ever break your record of back-to-back wins, then second the next year, and then a couple years later making yet another final table. We're talking about an era when how many people were in tournaments that when you won it?
I think it's between the 87 is 167, and then 88 is like 200 and change. 90 is like 200,000-300,000.
But at that time, you're talking about pretty much all quality players. It was not
the best of the best. There's no online money. There's no debt money.
No donkey minefields to get through, right? You were playing against all good players. Now you play in the main event. We were talking when you first sat down here about sitting with nine guys you never saw, you never heard of, you never knew anything about them. That's got to be maybe tougher now, not just because of the size of the field, but because of the quality of play being all over the place.
Exactly. It's so tough. I mean, you know, it's just tough. But anyway, yeah, like you said, Paul, I don't think my records are ever going to be broken, so I'm going to happy with that.
There's no way in the world anybody will ever break that record, period. That's done.
Thank you, Dennis.
That is totally unbelievable if somebody could do it in the first place. So, yeah, it's safe.
Tell us a little bit. Our listeners are always curious about Bobby's room. Tell us about what it's like in there, the games you play, who is usually sitting at the table, et cetera.
Bobby's room, every year during the World Series, there's only two tables, two poker tables, of course, and also there's one little dining table. You can sit down, relax, and eat dinner. It's very private. We play 2 and 4,000 up to 4 and 8,000 mixed games. And, you know, you name it, the players say, okay, I decided I want to play that game, and the other player, okay, I agree, I like to play that game. So we put, like, the player's choice, we put all the games together, we play. Playing 2 and 4,000 or 4 and 8,000.
Limit.
Mostly limit. A lot of limit game. But the other table mostly play pot limit Omaha, which is you're playing with people from Europe, like Zygmunt, Antonio, Patrick Antonio, Sam Faha, Tom Duran. I mean, you name it, the best Omaha players going to play on the other table.
Mm-hmm.
The table that I play in, which is Doyle Brunson, Jennifer Harmon, Eli, David Benjamin.
Barry might be in there.
Barry Johnson.
Does Daniel play in there anymore? Much?
Daniel, I think Daniel's record in there is not that good. I haven't seen Daniel for a while. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you're playing mixed games and maybe 6 or 8 game mix?
At least 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jennifer in her interview said sometimes you go all the way up to even 12 games.
We'll play the game, any game. I mean, we'll play low limit hold'em, pot limit Omaha, limit Omaha, Omaha high low split, Stenning or better. Seven car stud Raz. Triple draw deuce to seven. Triple draw ace to five. You play Raz deuce to seven. You play Producey. I mean, you name it, we play it.
And is it dealer's choice, so the game is changing on each hand, or do you play a round?
Paul, no, we play every eight hand, we change the game. We have a plat, we change the game every eight hands. So uh-huh. The dealer's changed it.
And are the pots capped? Is the game capped?
We play the pot limit or no limit. Normally, we cap it at 75,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which means that each player can put in no more than 75K.
Or you cannot lose more than 75,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
And how much money is on the table?
Oh, my Lord. I would say between at least $1 million on the table. Last year is unbelievable. Last year was, I see, like $5-6 million on the table.
Wow.
That's cash, yeah.
Wow. How long do you play for a session? I mean, you talked before about how you can't go 9 hours without getting tired. You can't possibly play limits like that for that long, can you?
Well, one thing about playing cash games, you can quit anytime you want. I mean,
sure.
you sit down, you win a couple hundred thousand, say, okay, have a nice day. Go upstairs and take a nap and come back. The game's always going to be there, so you don't have to play that long.
I'm really curious about this because I know listeners have. People always ask me about
Paul,
this.
Paul, sounds like you want to get in the game. So.
Johnny, I would sit down in that game never under any circumstances. I wouldn't even sweat that game from outside the room. Are you kidding me?
Oh, it's exciting. When you see $1 million.
Yeah.
but I'm curious about when the game starts. Does somebody call somebody else up and say, okay, we're coming down and we're going to start at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock? Or
yeah, well, normally we text everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody just shows up. And
whoever shows. Not everybody. Sometimes they show up. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes I'm in the tournament. Sometimes I got to go do things, you know.
And are
but
you
normally, like today, we I was supposed to start game at 2:30 because Dennis, I told Dennis I would be here. So I'm going to say, hey, listen, I got to take care of business first, so I'm play poker later. So.
We appreciate that.
Very much so.
Are you all secretly hoping that some whale is going to come into town and try to take on you and the rest of the big guys?
Every now and then that happens.
Actually, Doyle said the other day it happens fewer and fewer anymore, but he says every now and then you get the right guy in there.
Exactly. I mean, you never know who's going to walk in that door.
Yeah.
And these guys, let me tell you, they'll open the door for anybody. You got the best of the best playing in there. Who would they be afraid of? There is nobody.
That's right.
The door is open. If you have $1 million and you want to go lose it, go to Bobby's room. Johnny will greet you at the door.
You know, we've been there for that place opened since '98, and we're there almost every day. I mean, whenever the action is.
Now, what about Phil Ivey has a room over at Aria that they're going to try to move some high stakes games to? What's happening with that?
You know, I never play a hand of poker there, so I can't tell you, Paul.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they're going to have a hard time making a go of it there. I think the guys will stay over there.
I think if you told a lot of people that Phil Ivey was going to be playing somewhere, a lot of players would say, I'll be somewhere else.
I'll be at the Bellagio. That's why we hit the Bellagio.
Well, what's in the future for Johnny Chan then? What are you going to the next? Are you got some ambition, something especially you want to do?
Well, I just bought a nightclub here in town, 10,000
okay.
square feet. It's going to name number 18, Club 18,
right
on Spring Mountain and Jones. Every now and then I finish poker, we take the guys, go in there, go sing along. It's Kalaoke, karaoke place. And we have nice foods and a little slot machine and a little dancing floor. So
cool. I will check it out.
All right.
Great.
That's good.
And as the year goes by and the World Series is behind you, what does the rest of 2010 and into 2011 hold for you? Do you play a lot of tournaments now, or are you just hanging around waiting for a game in Bobby's room?
You know, like this year, I didn't play any tournament. I played one tournament. I played the Deuce of Seven tournament. It was so boring. The structure was so bad. I didn't enjoy that, so I said, I'm not going to play anymore. So then, of course, I had the free roll of the tournament champion. And then main event, you got to play that. I mean, it's so much overlay. So, I enjoy playing in Bobby's room.
Yeah. But most of the year, you're not traveling to play tournaments anymore? You don't do that?
I go to Macau every now and then. They got some good poker game over there. Good no limit poker game. Yeah.
Okay.
New money, new players, new face. So I don't have to look at Doyle every day.
Well, they've got Florida just opened up. They got rid of their $100 limit, and it's opening it up. I was talking to the grinder and some of the guys who can't wait to get back down there. They said there's going to be some great games breaking out.
Everybody's telling me that. So maybe next place I'm going to go to Florida.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I wonder.
The
yeah.
beach? What can't go wrong? The only thing is the hurricane. I don't know about that one.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Should be some good games. There's always someplace else. There's always something new happening in poker. So
that's
some
right.
new hot spot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's awesome. I love this game.
Yeah.
All right.
Johnny, we really appreciate you coming on the show. We wanted to talk to you for a long time, and it's really been a pleasure sitting here and spending some time with you.
You know, Dennis, Paul, my pleasure to be here, and I'll probably be back. And before the final table, I hope I can do one more interview with you guys, okay?
That sounds
We'd
good.
Love to do that.
And check for all-in energy drinks at the stores and everything that's coming out. I can recommend it.
There you go.
Thank you.
Poker Hall of Famer Johnny Chan joining us here at the final table. Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris online at thechipleader.com and on the air on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.